First question, no.
Next question. Second question, fuck no.
I don't know. It's
third question,
maybe.
There's no yes or no questions.
Yeah, they're all yes or no questions.
That is, yeah, the second one.
Now do you come in each?
Sorry?
Yes. No.
First question is, how is Nona doing?
Who?
I haven't whipped her out in a while.
I haven't seen her in a long time.
I haven't seen her in a long time. Although...
14 years ago, last time?
No. Well, I mean, maybe a partial sighting in Glasgow. I technically wore a skirt. I believe they call it a kilt, but it's a skirt, you know. So, and I did go shop and pick it out myself. But I took a buddy with me, so I bought my buddy a skirt too. But kilt.
So Nona is still in the picture then.
She only made a few appearances. That was actually fun. We always do kind of whacked weird shit like that. Interview processes and stuff, and what that was particularly for an EPK, yeah. Which we did one recently. It's kind of a weird thing anyway, because it's a pre-interview for people to interview you anyway, so it's kind of a...
Where you talk about yourself, and you're supposed to talk about how cool you are,
and that's
all the cool shit you've done, and then you just feel like a dick, and why would you do that? I'm pretty cool, I sold some records.
Generally speaking, it's not very fun, so we try to make it fun whenever we can. That's why I don't know if you saw the last one we did with the Kiss makeup. That was pretty fun. That was pretty fun.
No, but another thing, I think
we got our laundry done.
You came up with the Nona.
We've worked with a guy for a lot of years who did album artwork and a lot of videos and stuff. And his name's Rocky Shank, and he's just really fun to work with, and we kind of get along really well. And we kind of pulled all of that shit together like within a day. You know, we just kind of get together, we riff on some ideas, and then we hit a secondhand store. Pretty soon, I got a clutch purse and a pink fucking dress. You know, but we kind of made that up and kind of scripted it out. Roughly, and then we just kind of ad-libbed it through, you know.
But I think it was a good... I think you made a good presenter.
Yeah, the record company was really...
Thank you.
...not happy at first.
They actually hated it.
Yeah, they hated it when they got it, and they were like, what the fuck is this? We can't use this. How dare you take the money? You're supposed to be all talking about yourself and how cool you are, and what are we going to do with this? We just said, I don't know, do whatever. Don't put it out. Yeah. That's all we're going to do, and... Then
people ended up actually liking it, and then they got on board.
Yeah, and then they got on board, and then they tried to sell it or something. And like, oh yeah, it's great.
Now I'd like to go pre-Everything Change. I don't know if you still have the memories.
That's a long time ago, too. Pre, okay.
Do you remember your first meeting? Because I think you were in a band called Diamond Lie.
I was in a band called Diamond Lie.
But I think he was in it too.
No. No.
Then my information is incorrect.
It's wrong.
Well, it's kind of, you know.
Can't believe everything on the interweb.
This is true. No, we all come from like little suburbs, I guess, of around Seattle. And I was the furthest south. I was from Tacoma. I had a band called Diamond Lie, and at that particular time, Lane had a version of this. You know, using the name Alice. Chains. It was spelled a little differently, and it was a completely different band. And Sean and Mike Starr were playing, I think, jamming together. Yeah. And I actually ended up the first guy I met Lane when he played the Tacoma Little Theater in Tacoma. So I met him first, but I actually played with Mike Starr first in a in a really crappy band called Gypsy Rose in Burien. My mother had just passed away, and I didn't really have any place to stay, and I kind of was done with Tacoma anyway. So I met this guy, Tim Branham, and he invited me to come up and hang with him, and I stayed in his basement for about a week, and Mike Starr came over, and we were jamming, and then we both got kicked out after a week. So then I didn't see Mike again until I met Lane again at a house party kind of recently, or pretty much right after that, and he kind of had heard about my situation, and I didn't really have a place to live or anything, and so he invited me up to Ballard, where he lived at this place called the Music Bank, which was fucking awesome. I mean, for a bunch of young kids, it was a 24-hour rehearsal hall, 50 rooms, and just something going on all the time, you know. And he was playing in his band, and I lived in his rehearsal room, and he knew I was trying to get a band together, and he'd met Sean about a year, I think a year ago or a year before that, at like Alki Beach or something like that.
Where was it?
Just in Seattle, this place called Alki. I was drifting around too with nowhere to live and rented.
Because you said in our previous interview that you were homeless too before.
We were all kind of drifting around.
Yeah, I've been homeless since I was about 15. I met Lane. And we exchanged information. I mean, there was no way to get a hold of each other, but somehow he remembered me. And
he had a piece of paper with your number on it.
Yeah, and then when somebody's number. I didn't have a phone.
Probably Melinda's or something.
Yeah, my girlfriend's or something, who was Mike Starr's sister. And Jerry, I guess, was looking to put a band together. And Lane said, oh, this drummer dude seems cool. Call him. Mm-hmm. So Jerry called my girlfriend at the time, and me and her went down.
That's right, it was Melinda.
Yeah, it was Melinda's number. And you called her, and then we went down to the music bank, and I listened to some of your demos and stuff. You had like a headband, one of those kind of like a thing like...
It's like a gold LeMay.
Like Ian Astbury wore or something. And I came down and we listened to a couple tunes, and I thought it was pretty cool, and we kind of... feeling each other out, and as I was sitting there, he said something like, oh, you know, we need a bass player to jam with. I jammed with this guy, Mike Starr, a year or so ago. He seemed like kind of a cool dude, and I was like, that's weird, because this is his sister, and I've been in bands with Mike on and off since we were 11 or 12 or something.
Yeah.
He's like, wow, that's weird. So I called Mike, and Mike either came down that night or the next day, and we came back, and we got in a room and borrowed some gear and jammed.
And Lane was playing with another band, but he came in to jam with us too, like after we'd been kind of playing together for...
So that was the first actual rehearsal?
No rehearsal. We didn't have any songs, but I think we were playing like... We're jamming on things like, my baby loves the hanky-panky, just jamming on some shit like that for some fucking reason. Yeah, as we were doing that, a promoter guy was...
I think that was fucking Star's idea, actually,
Something, but we were jamming on some stupid shit like that, and some guy that's a promoter for some shows was cruising around through the hallway looking for bands to play and heard us jamming in this room, and all these people were in there hanging out, kind of a party thing, and I think they asked if we could... Yeah, what's the name of the band? Could you play? You know, and we didn't really have a band. We were like, yeah, totally. Can you play a half hour, 40 minutes?
Sure.
A bunch of songs. We have any songs or anything.
Yeah.
And so we lied and said we could, and then we got a gig, and we went there.
We did a gig within a week or two of us being, like, even just jamming together. And I think where the confusion comes with the Diamond Lie thing is like, we really didn't have a name to call ourselves, so we like at every gig we would call ourselves something else, and I think we used that
name. What name did you have?
Well, we used my band name for a couple of gigs, and nobody was really into that, including me, and so I think Sean might have came up with Fuck. He wanted the name of the band. Yeah.
But Unlawful Carnal.
So we made stickers, you know, and we put them on condoms and said Fuck the band and put them on condoms.
That didn't last long because nobody would put your flyers up or anywhere, you know.
We'd
go and put them up, and then and Lane was still playing with his other band and a couple other sort of things.
Yeah.
And we were trying to lure him into, you know, as we were starting to think, well, this is pretty cool. Maybe we could really do something here. Yeah.
We all really dug him, but he kind of had like a little bit of an established thing, but it was kind of coming to the end.
How come? I mean, his band, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of, I think he was just kind of, it was just kind of, they'd had their run or whatever of what it was going to be, and it was kind of falling apart a little bit. I don't think he was quite that interested in it anymore, and he was jamming with some other guys that was kind of more like a, kind of almost like a, kind of an industrial dance kind of thing, almost.
Yeah, like a Cure type thing.
Yeah, so he made a deal with me because they needed another guitar player for this band. He's like, well, if you play... guitar with me and this thing, then I'll jam with you guys and your thing. So we were kind of double dutying it there until both of those things shit the bed, and we were just like, fuck, man, quit this, you know. I mean, we all, he was just such a cool fucking guy, and his, and his voice was just amazing, and we knew we wanted to be in a band with him right off the bat. So it was just a period of time of kind of like waiting him out, and then that didn't seem to work. So we basically told him, okay, we're gonna get a new singer. So we started auditioning singers in his rehearsal room, and we just brought in the shittiest guys we could find,
the worst singers we could find. We'd bring him in and have him sing, and then he'd be coming in and out. And he's just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Kept saying, what are you guys doing? We go, oh, no, that guy wasn't that bad.
He wasn't too bad. I kind of like that guy.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. And we were purposely doing that, and then it just got, after about three guys that were just so horrendous, he came in and he was like, okay, fuck that. I'm joining. Let's just do this thing. I'll quit the other bands. Because, you know, we were really young, you know, so he'd grown up and went to school with the other guys in his band, and he felt really, you know, they were friends, but
Was it good, the band?
Huh?
Was the band good, or...?
Yeah, sure. They were.
It was good. It was a real kind of glam band, and they were good at what they did. But I think it was just kind of came to an end, and it was, you know, they grew up together, so it was really hard to, you know, to leave that. And
I think the final straw was we auditioned a male stripper. We auditioned a redheaded male stripper who was just terrible.
Yeah.
And that was it. And he's like, okay, fuck it. I can't let you guys play with these fucking clowns. I'll fucking join the band. And that was it.
Did you write songs during that period? Or?
Sure. I mean, that was the whole thing. A lot of the stuff we were writing, you know, I don't think we had ever had found an identity or anything yet. I mean, a lot of that stuff ended up kind of being on the box set. A lot of those early kind of demos were kind of searching for whatever the fuck we were, you know, and they're pretty bad. But I mean, if you kind of think about like the young kids we were and the time we came up with, you know, there was at least some good choruses and a couple of good riffs here and there. I mean, the lyrics were fucking horrible, but I mean, it was a start, you know what I mean? And I was always I was always into writing songs, and so that was kind of the beginning part of that. And you know, Lane had written songs in his band too, so we kind of, so you know, we after we had spent a little bit of time together, and not really too much time, you know, we kind of stumbled onto a couple of tunes here and there that kind of were completely different, you know, and they were kind of whatever we sounded like together, and kind of we all kind of were looking for something different than what was going on. I mean, what we grew up. Yeah, you got to think about like when we grew up, the shit that was on MTV and the stuff that was popular was pretty much like the hair metal, you know, Rat, fucking Dokken, Motley Crue, and you know, and I loved all that shit. You know, I always loved the guitar players and stuff in those bands. So, but that's what was going on, and so, you know, so there was a lot of maybe influences of that type of stuff, but there was also a lot of really cool shit going on in Seattle. A lot of really great, you know, cool bands that were much more kind of indie and punk and maybe a little darker, and I think some of that kind of rubbed off a little bit too, you know, and we ended up kind of stumbling onto a couple of tunes that were like, okay, you know, we all kind of looked at each other and like, wow, that's kind of maybe where we should be going, you know. Just kind of natural. There was a song called Chemical Addiction.
Yeah, there
I think.
Was parts of parts of tunes where we started. Because it was more like just get together and get party, you know. It wasn't really serious. And then it kind of became like we'd rehearse before.
We actually
and it
played
was just
a lot.
And it was just an
excuse. Because we had nowhere to live. And we lived in our rehearsal place, so we had a lot of time to fucking
play. And we had nothing. And so it was kind of an excuse to keep a party going. And then we were jamming, spent more time together, it kind of, the music started evolving to where it was our own kind of thing. And then it became, you know, it took it more serious, you know. It was kind of like, wow, we really have something here instead of, oh, this is just a little passing phase of who cares, you know. And that's when it, you know, it kind of gelled and became more serious. And
what time is this? Is this because I think, well, your first demo was released in July 1990. Is this pre-July?
Oh, yeah.
That was when the record came out. We were doing demos like in 88 and 89.
87,
So 3 years demoing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think within the first year and a half, we definitely figured out what we were doing. And a lot of those, some of those songs on Facelift were actually, you know, from that a period because we, you know, by the time we were playing out and we'd kind of found our own identity and what we were about, then by like late 88, 89, the record labels were interested in the band because we were, and we had big lofty goals like we want to sell out the Central Tavern, you know, those are, and we would, we'd pack it out and there'd be people outside and, you know, and Lane wasn't old enough. We just were old enough to get into a bar, you know, and Lane wasn't old enough and he'd have to wait outside until right when we'd get on stage and he'd have to go straight to the stage and play and leave. And and so we were like, you know, packing out everywhere we played in Seattle and we were like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then some record people kind of started snipping around up there. And then by the time Facelift came out, we'd been negotiating with labels for probably, you know, from late 88, 89, and when we went to, it was CBS at the time, which turned into Sony, but that, just that negotiation with them, to sign with them, took like 8 months.
Yeah.
And so that was almost a year, and that was really nail-biting, like, it's a deal-breaker, because we were trying to, we had good managers and great lawyers, and we were trying to retain things that you can't usually keep, you know.
Like your publishing.
When you're a new band and stuff, and we were fortunate to do that, but, you know, we were like, you know, when you're young like that, you're like, fuck, you know, let's just do this so we, you know, wow, it's, we're going to get a record deal. But we waited it out, and it ended up working out for us. But so a lot of that stuff that was on Facelift, by the time that record came out, you know, they'd signed us for a lot of those songs, and we'd already been, had moved on from then, you know, so that record had come out. So even like when we were touring on that album, we were probably playing some stuff that was, you know, potentially going to be on Dirt and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, I mean, we'd moved on quite a bit. The band, once we figured out what we were doing and took it serious as a band, it progressed really quickly. You know?
I mean, the songs that are written, let's say, once you found your sound, were the songs written in some sort of natural same way? Can you say that? Or?
What do you mean, the same way?
I mean, once you've found your sound, can you say, well, then once you've stumbled upon it, and then you crafted it, and then you know how to
It's just kind of a natural thing, you know. I mean, we spent a lot of time together. We lived together. We did everything together. We fucking, you know, we lived in rehearsal rooms together. When we got lucky enough to. You know, Mike Starr's mom fucking let us move into one of her house that she had, you know, and
we all moved in
together, you know, and then when we went on tour, we were on a bus together. I mean, we were together for years, so, you know, and we all like to play, man, and we were really digging what we were doing, so, you know, I'd come up with a riff, or Sean would be playing drums, I'd start playing with him, or Lane would have a cool thing, or Mike, or whatever, you know. And, you know, somebody would be playing something, you know, you just play, you know. I might be playing something and Sean would go, well, what is that? That's cool. And so we'd jam on it or any combination of that, you know. Anybody would come up and he'd have a cool fucking drum riff. I'm like, that's fucking badass, you know. And so we just put it down and work on them, you know. I mean, that process really hasn't changed since we started. We just play together and we... You know, not everything you come up with is good, you know. And actually, probably more often than not, it's probably not good. But the thing that is constant is like you just kind of, you get an idea and you follow it to its logical conclusion and see if it's something that everybody can back. Or maybe, you know, maybe you think it's good and you put it down and you listen to it a few days later and that wasn't so good.
No, but I mean, you were saying that first song, Chemical Reaction, you were saying? What's the song? You were saying that's the
Chemical Addiction was a song early on.
Yeah, there was parts of that that started sounding more like...
Yeah, a couple, you know. Couple of tune parts, yeah.
No, but...
Because Social Parasite, that, shit like that.
No, but once you found your own sound, and I think then once you found it,
well, you didn't find it. It just naturally happens because of the combination of the people, you know. And up till then, it was like nobody took it serious. It was just like whatever. Well, let's just play any excuse to be able to play somewhere. And you know, the music wasn't the foremost thing at the beginning. It was just survival and partying and having a place to go. And then once we hit upon some stuff that was a combination of how people actually played and worked together and spending that time, then it was like, oh wow, this is different than the other things we'd all done individually. And then it, you know, took on a life of its own and started.
When you find your sound is basically when all four of you are digging whatever the fuck you're playing, and that's what it is. And you know, that's your sound.
Yeah, because we all have different influences, but we all have the same ones too. You know, we all love Zeppelin and Sabbath and stuff. You know, and all those things. And so, you know, it kind of just developed on its own. And then,
what do you think? Well, you've released, let me see, three EPs, and then this is now the fourth studio album. If you look on the first period, can you say what was for you the progression from Facelift to Dirt to the Alice in Chains album?
Time.
Time and experience. Yeah. That's it. You know,
just time. You know,
and maybe sound wise.
I think we sound the way that we sound. I mean, some records might sound a little different based on, you know, recording techniques, you know what I mean? I think we used the same producer on the first two records, so we kind of had a kind of a similar sonic sound in the way that we were recorded, but all of the things that you heard were just us, you know what I mean? The Dog record was quite a bit different because we used a different guy. It was a little bit more kind of open and maybe not so layered and a lot more jammy, you know, and we had a different guy recording us at that particular time. You know, it's just records are, you know, records usually happen a year or 2 years after each other, so that's a lot of life and a lot of experience, and, you know, and they're kind of like little snapshots or like a check-in periods or diaries, I guess, of a period of time, you know.
Well, it's been 14 years since the previous album.
Mm-hmm.
What was actually the first song that you wrote for this album actually turning into an Alice in Chains song? Do you still recall?
God, I couldn't even really tell you what the first thing was. It was more just, about a year. You know, we toured for about a year or two, and that was the intent. There wasn't any intent to do a record. Once we had kind of done a few gigs and we kind of had felt that it was maybe okay to play our stuff again, and maybe it was a good thing. Maybe it was a good thing for us to spend time together and to kind of enjoy what we created with our friend Lane, who is no longer here, and maybe to share that with everybody one more time, because obviously the story ended fucking badly, you know, and we lost our friend in the process. And so, you know, I guess the intent was kind of maybe to play that music and kind of, you know, spend time with each other and go around and play the music to everybody who the music meant something to, you know? I mean, we didn't fucking play, you know, even before Lane died, we didn't play for a long time, but the music somehow kind of took on a life of its own and people kept it alive, you know what I mean? It's a symbiotic relationship. It's not just us making music. We can make music till the fucking cows come home, but if nobody fucking likes it or listens to it, we're not doing too much with it, you know? Yeah. So that was the intent. And in the process of doing that, you know, like we explained before, it's like we're talented guys and we like to play music and we play really well together, you know what I mean? So it was just a process of about a year and a half of like the same thing, you know. Yeah. Sean and I would be in a room like this before a gig and playing riffs, you know, and when we both would kind of maybe look up or like, hey, that's cool, fucking somebody would record it. So after about a year and a half, we had a shitload of fucking like riffs and ideas. And so I can't really tell you what was the first. I can tell you that everything that is on that record is from bits and pieces of riffs that we kind of collected over like about a year and a half.
Yeah. And the first thing I remember when we even thought about even talking about making a record or demoing anything is Jerry sent me the Black Gives Way to Blue demo. And I was like, if we even entertain the thought of doing this, we can't do it any different than we always did. We can't hold back and pull punches. We got to just lay it out there just like we always did. Because it's always been a very truthful band about what's going on, you know.
Yeah.
Even though it's, you know, could be, everything's left for interpretation, for people to take it the way they want. It's not like spelled out like, then I met her and her name was Sandy, and then, you know, it's not like that. But to us, we know what it is. You know, it's no secret to us, but it's
kind of. And I remember when we, like, started to, when we actually said, okay, well, let's fucking put some of this shit together and start demoing it. And I remember really clearly Sean telling me that, you know, and just and that's something I knew and I felt too, but it was really good that he put it out there, you know, and just kind of said, hey, dude, you know, never fucking pulled any punches now, so don't fucking start, you know. And there's a lot of story to tell, and it's fucking heavy, and it's real, and it's our story.
I remember getting that, him sending that to me.
Yeah.
I remember hearing like just the guitar thing and him going on his couch down in his house, and I was like, all right. And, you know, but you don't get the whole gist of it. And then he'd kind of worked on it and put other parts to it and had it sketched out and sent it to me. And I was like, well, that pretty much, if we can keep with that, you know, I can't get any more honest and straightforward than that, you know. So if we stay there, then it's, you know, I'm down with let's see what we got. And we went in and rented a house that had a guest house in the back that had been turned into a studio just to demo and also to hear what it'd be like with Will, and just, you know, you have no idea, you know. And we went in there and
made it really feel it out, you know.
Yeah, you know, and it ended up really digging what we were doing, you know, just getting a room and jam and record it and record work on some of these ideas, and we started digging that. And then we had to come up with, like, do we really want to go through with putting a record out, you know what I mean?
But did you talk to Lane's, maybe his mom or something, because she has some sort of...
No. I don't know. She's
maybe
not in the band.
No, but
they're like our family. We're extremely close, but you know, it's, yeah, we don't
maybe
need.
Maybe you thought, well, maybe we should. I don't know if it's
why.
Well, look, I mean, like Sean said, they're family. You know, they're part of our family. It's not like they weren't, like, you know, like aware of what we were doing. They were coming to our shows, and fuck, I mean, you know, fucking Jim's there. Jim was there. Phil was there. Fucking Nancy was there. They were there anytime we rolled anywhere near fucking home. They're there. You know, they fucking love us and they support us too, and that's cool. But we didn't have to like kiss the ring or get fucking permission or something like that.
Yeah, it's not like
no, that's not what I mean. But,
yeah, I mean,
it's not that sort of a thing.
Yeah,
you know.
And what we just, you know, that's you don't need permission to do those things.
To do.
I mean, if we didn't feel right about it and we didn't know what was right for us, and if we didn't know our friend Lane and know how we would all feel and how things are, then that's all that matters. You know, it wasn't any weird. The only conflicting thing was, do we want to do this? Do you want to go and talk about shit you didn't talk about for 14 years like we are right now? Do you want to deal with all, there's so much more to it. Playing music and being together and being friends, we were always great friends and always have been and remained that way before, through all that. We just didn't do it publicly because we didn't want to deal with it. And Lane didn't want to deal with it. And we were always extremely tight.
Yeah.
It was, do you want to deal with all the rest that comes with it, you know? And we had, luckily, some success to where, you know, we didn't have to do it. You know, we didn't have to do this to survive, to deal with that. And that's what was the hardest part, is do you want to really go and deal with all the other bullshit and the scrutiny of...
It's a lot to take on, man.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's a lot to take on. You know, for the most part, too, part of it for me, personally, was just like, I felt like when Lane passed away, largely got swept under the carpet.
Yeah.
You know, they just kind of like discounted everything he was. He was so much more than whatever they tried to sum up. And it really, really dawned on me and made me really sick when he just passed away and we'd been up for another Grammy and we went to they convinced us to go. We weren't going to fucking go. And, you know, I ended up going because I was like, well, this is never going to fucking happen again. So we went, and they, at the end of those, or during those shows, they play a collage of all the people that had passed away that year. They didn't even put him up there.
Yeah. No.
How come? Why?
I don't know. I'm not in the grant. You know.
This is what we're saying.
And that's what kind of really. You know, I remember us like looking at each other and just getting up and leaving.
Yeah.
Like, how fucking stupid is that? You know. And so, you know, part of the fuel personally for me to even want to take on this stuff and sit here and talk about that stuff is because I think it wasn't handled very well, and being able to champion these, all that we did together, and to move on and do this together and share that with these people,
and to see him start to now get changed, now people aren't necessarily just writing the fucking straight fucking, they always got to put the blurb in, died of heroin, a fucking overdose, junkie. That's the only thing anybody ever fucking write. And to see that start to fucking kind of fade and people realize what the fucking guy contributed and the amazing talent that he was. And, yeah. And the thing is like nobody's ever going to know personally what kind of fucking guy he was. We do. And he was so fucking cool and badass.
His family does.
And his family does. And yeah, right. And so it's kind of cool. He's kind of taking on like an Obi-Wan kind of thing. He's like become a little more powerful in death. And it's kind of, he's gained a lot more reverence and stuff. And so that's nice to see. And by us doing that, that kind of shines a little bit more light on the man that he was instead of the way that he fucking died. You know,
we get to do that every night. You know, these people sing those songs
and
that we did with him and they do it and it's a really cool experience. You know,
we care about it and they care about it too, and that's really all that really matters, man.
And if you talk to bands, there are many bands really influenced by you and by him.
Sure.
Yeah.
But maybe not the public, maybe not, but.
Well, that's bands, okay, man. We never were for everybody anyway, man. You know who we're for? We're for us, and we're for the people that are going to be in this room. 2,000 people are going to be here tonight. That's who we're here for, and that's all they get it, and that's fucking enough.
Yeah.
can I ask you one last question about the album? The song. Do you want to talk about the lyrics, or don't you want to talk about the lyrics?
What do you got?
Private Hell. I really I like the song. Is it written from some sort of perspective of him?
No, I mean, you know, just God. Who did I just talk to about?
I was thinking because, well, the lyrics. I'm on my own private.
No, I knew exactly where you were going to go with it, and it's funny because I just had
I printed all the lyrics, so I just.
No, I know. What's funny is I just had this conversation with somebody last night about that particular song and what you said, if that it's related to him. And it's absolutely not. It's completely about something else. But the cool thing, I've always consciously tried to, sometimes I consciously try and sometimes I don't. I think that the way that I write, it's pretty open to whatever the fuck you want it to mean. And maybe it's not about any one specific thing. Maybe there's about four or five things that are going on at once. But that song completely is not about Lane. It's about me breaking up with a fucking girl that I really loved a lot. And I just wasn't really kind of fucking man enough to go through with it. That's what the song basically is. But there's a lot of shit in there that it's not specifically about that either. And so it's more about what inspired the song was me breaking up with somebody that I love very much, but it's also meant, you know, talking about the, you know, excuse myself, I'm used to my little cell, I'm not ready, I'm good here, you know what I mean? That's kind of from my point of view, but you could relate that to anybody. Yes. And Sean could relate to it, you could relate to it. That's the cool thing about a song, you know, it's that old fucking saying, which I'm sure you've heard, you know, you can show 10 people a painting and they're going to see fucking something different every time. And that's totally cool. You know, it might not mean anything that has to do with what the guy fucking painting it fucking meant, you know, and that's all right. That's what makes it personal to you.
One question I still have. You recorded two songs in 1999, Died and Get Born Again.
Mm-hmm.
Were you actually talking maybe about recording new album? Because I listened to an interview, I think, in 1999. Lane phoned in and you were in, I think it was a radio interview.
Oh, Rockline or something
That. Were you actually talking about doing some new stuff, maybe a new album?
Sure.
We were always, that was always a possibility. It was never closed until for me or any of us or Lane or anybody until the day he passed away.
Yeah. So he also talked about doing new stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Because, well, the image is that he was just not into music anymore, but he was.
No, that's not true.
No, I mean, I'd fucking go over to his place and fucking he'd be playing me shit. He'd be writing all the time, you know, and I would too. And he'd play me stuff and I'd play him stuff and vice versa, you know. I mean, there's always a possibility. I mean, it was just a lot, you know. We did a lot of really amazing things together, and we did far more than I think we ever fucking intended. And And that's a lot to digest for a bunch of young kids, you know what I mean? Young men, you know what I mean? And all of that, all that it entails. It's not fucking built for longevity, what we do, for any band, you know, for whatever fucking reason, man. So, but the cool thing is through all of that shit, we always did what was right for us. And it might not have been right for business, because if it was fucking right for business, we wouldn't have fucking, we wouldn't have put two number one records out back to back and then not toured them, you know? Yeah. It just wasn't feeling right to us personally, where we were at personally. So we made those decisions for us. If we were out to fucking cash in, we would have been out there fucking going until one of us fucking died on the road. But we didn't. We cared about each other, and we still care about each other in that way. And that's the thing that I'm most proud of. I'm really proud of the music, and I'm proud of the success that we've had. But more importantly, I'm proud of everything that we've gone through as friends and becoming men and going through the hardest things and the coolest things, you know, life. Yeah.
What was then, that's the question, what was the hardest period? Because I think, well, you recorded until 1995, then you did the Unplugged in 96, and then, you had your solo album release. What was the hardest part then? And then later on, the coolest part?
It's all
that?
Fucking hard, dude. There's no goddamn roadmap. I mean, you
know.
I hear what you're saying. You're trying to pick a period that's like the hardest part. I mean, it's just life, man. Okay. You know,
they all had their ups and downs. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It could be a really fucking hard. Fucking, it could be a real shitty day where some cool shit happens too. Just take that and expand that into our lives over the years, man. You know.
Yeah, I mean, the initial point of taking a break and staying off the road to try to keep our health for all of us in order went on a lot longer than I think any of us had hoped. But you know, I'd be home still doing that, and if Lane would have survived, you know. If he was still there and we weren't ready to play, I'd probably still be, right. Who knows what I'd be doing, you know? I mean, knowing that, I did know that we would have got back together, but it has unfortunately panned out the way it has. And by the horrible nature of that has led to this, you know? You just don't, you have to just take life as it comes, and you take opportunities that feel right to you, and you deal with them and you try to handle them the best you can, you know. I think it's as shocking to us as it is to anybody else that we are where we are right now. But it feels right, and it's the right thing for us to do, and we back it 100%. And it hasn't been easy, and it's still not the easiest thing, but it's also a very rewarding thing. And every night you get reminded by that when you play, and all the, you know, the people show up and they take part in that, because it's really about us and them, you know. It's not about fucking whatever, some dickhead in a magazine or somebody. I don't really care about any of that.
I mean, the lesson is you can't control a lot of shit that happens to you, and everything that happens to you in life is not good, you know. But you don't just fucking give up, you know. You don't just stop living, you know. You, at some point, you figure out, okay, well, this is the way it is. And by kind of dealing with those particular things and whatever those difficulties are, you end up fucking doing things that you never expected, or going places that you never expected, you know. And this is the most unexpected thing for us to be sitting here talking to you about this, and to have put that record out, and to have worked 3 or 4 years to even get to the point where that even felt okay or became a reality. We never expected any of that stuff, but I'm not glad about the way that it happened. But I'm totally glad about the fact that we have done all of this work, and that it's paying off. You know, it's paying off because people are getting it. But first off, we all felt good enough to be able to do it. Shit, man, still get to do this for a living. You know, it's pretty fucking cool. And play your own music that you created, and to own all of that shit, and not fucking to own all of that stuff, and you know, not shy away from it. And be fucking proud of it. It's our fucking story, you know. It's nobody else's.
last question. Are there still some songs left in the vault that you haven't released yet with Lane?
No.
Everything is out.
No, back then, we pretty much, when we went in to record, that's what you got, you know. Yeah. There was a couple of little ideas maybe here and there, but I doubt it. I don't really think there's anything left, you know. Yeah.
And if there is, it's nothing that...
It's nothing worth releasing.
Nothing that we would want, or we know that he wouldn't want it released, so why would we put it out?
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you.